Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hey there, bestie. I'm Lori Ami, your What to Read Next podcast host. Join me as we dive into exciting new reads that'll have you reaching for your TBR pile in no time. From gripping mysteries to spicy romances, we'll explore it all and help you find your next favorite book. So grab a cup of tea, cozy it up, and let's discover some amazing reads together. Hi, Leslie. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Leslie Stevens, and I'm the author of my debut novel, You're Safe Here. I live in Portland, Oregon with my pit bull mix, Toast, and I'm also the writer of the popular Substack newsletter, Morning Person newsletter, and am currently earning my master's degree in addictions counseling.
Oh my gosh, so much to talk about. How did you manage to do it all?
Honestly, it takes a lot of compartmentalizing, a lot of to-do lists and organization. Yeah. But I will say the things that I do, they overlap so much. You wouldn't think that counseling and writing a novel and writing about my life necessarily do, but one sort of fuels the other. So I feel like I always have this engine going that keeps me excited to be busy almost constantly, but it's a good busy.
Yeah. So when are you graduating for your master's
next year? So I'm actually taking some time off now for the release of my book because I recognize that it might be too busy. There is such thing as, too much chaos.
Yes.
But yeah, so I don't graduate until next year. It's a 3-year program. But
yes,
one thing at a time. Yeah.
It really comes down to, as they say in addiction stuff, so one day at a time, one thing at a time, one moment at a time. I once upon a time, I actually had an eating disorder. I went through the 12 steps, and the one thing I got is the one day at a time, and I ended up getting tattoo early recovery, and it's like, I don't regret it. I'm like, oh, but it's a good reminder to be grounded.
No, it's wonderful, and I feel like it's a tattoo that applies to recovery, of course, but it also just applies to everyday life.
Yes.
When things are overwhelming and there's too much to do and you're looking at your to-do list and it seems to span for months, it's like one day at a time, one thing at a time. So I think that's a wonderful reminder.
It really is. And, I'm on the other side and it's a wonderful place to be in the life side,
Congratulations.
But it's just part of it. So let's talk about what led you to start your Substack?
Oh, yeah. Well, so I had worked in food writing. I was an editor at Food 52, and then I worked in lifestyle media. I was an editor at Cupcakes and Cashmere, an LA-based lifestyle blog, for about 5 years. And as I decided to sort of pivot into counseling, I really wanted to do my own thing and own my own writing and have it on a platform that I could control. And so I launched my Substack Morning Person newsletter in the week between leaving my editorial position and starting my counseling program. And I had no idea if it was going to work. I had a vague sense of what I wanted it to look like. But since then, it's grown into this community of 30,000 subscribers and has just, it's exploded in a way that I couldn't have imagined. And I'm so grateful for.
That is so wonderful. And so what can readers expect to join your Substack?
Oh my gosh, I write about so many different things. I mean, the through line is really I write about whatever I'm genuinely fascinated about in my life. So that can be the deeply personal. I went through a divorce over the past 2 years, and so I was frequently writing about that. But there's also interior design recommendations and general lifestyle tips. So it's sort of, it can skim the surface of just the okay, here are the basic things to surface level get by, and then it can dive in deep and really explore these more deeply meaningful, sort of chewy life substantive things.
That's exciting. So listeners can actually join the Substack that can give you a little bit of everything and a nice, little break into your life, but also how it reflects back to your own life, this is going to be. So awesome.
Totally.
So let's talk about You're Safe Here. What is the elevator pitch?
Yeah, so You're Safe Here, it takes place in 2060 in California, but also the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It's told from the perspective of three women, and it really centers on this founder. Her name is Emmett, and she is the founder of this huge technology company that's just launched their latest product, which is this floating pod in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And this woman, Maggie, is on the pod. So you sort of hear from Emmett's perspective and get some flashbacks into why she created this. Then you see Maggie on the pod and understand why she would want to do that and why anybody would want to go out into this pod that was very much inspired by my work in sort of the LA lifestyle space, where there's this obsession with optimization and routines. And so I thought, okay, let's put someone in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, just like optimizing themselves and working on themselves. And what does that look like in this completely isolated environment? And then meanwhile, Maggie's partner, Noah, works for the company, which is called WellCore. And so she's sort of back in California running the show and working with the engineers back on land as, you know, things kind of start to go awry as Maggie is out at sea. So it's a fascinating exploration, I think, into where wellness is headed, where social media is headed, and topics that I am incredibly passionate about. Yeah, and that's the book.
Yeah, as someone who was heavily involved in the wellness space in the 2010s to 2019 in New York City, it's similar, but still, I think it's, New York is hyperactive and it's neurotic. There's expectation of like optimizing your time, optimizing your space, do. What are you creating? What are you putting together? How you're optimizing not just your wellness, but your abundance, your space, like how you can live a long life and look beautiful. It's exhausting. I ended up leaving New York.
I did too. I lived in New York for 2 years in my early 20s. And I got out of there as soon as I could because I loved the city. I loved everything about it. It was just such an incredible space to be. But it was toxic for me because this pace of life and this constant optimization and this pressure on output, it was something that I got so immersed in and almost like taken over by, where I was working, you know, 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. and felt like this is normal. This is great. And then started to recognize, like, oh, I am unraveling. I need to get out of this city.
It is an interesting dynamic because I actually found the reason why I stayed in the city, my plan was to be there for 2 years. And then I had an eating disorder, diagnosed, but like I just didn't want to treat it until I was ready to treat it. And then I found this like amazing community of recovery in New York, like this like place of like flourishing and place of like, you know, you have enough resources, you can actually get enough support system. And so I got attached to it. And then I was like, well, wellness is like the next step to deal with the emotions and deal with your inner work and deal with all these different modalities. And so I invested so much time and energy. And it was interesting because the girlies at the time, they called themselves the wellness mafia. And they don't take into account the mafia might not be the right connotation, but that's how they approached it. And so it was like this dynamic of like, you know, am I heal or am I on heal trauma walking around trying to fix others? Because that's what we can do, you know?
Yeah, and it's so interesting because wellness, like, of course, true, genuine wellness and self-care, which is this term that I'm fascinated by because I think that it gets distorted so easily in the media. You know, it's like self-care becomes this thing that's marketed. It's like, oh, it's skincare and it's eating, you know, almond butter and whatever, taking a bubble bath. When genuine self-care is not something that's marketable. It's just listening to yourself and attuning to yourself. And it's not something that somebody else's morning routine can tell you anything about. And so, you know, it's this, you get stuck in this like this paradox and this double-edged sword of wellness where on the one hand, it can be beautiful and it can lead to an interesting community and it can be part of a healing process. And on the other side, it can become toxic.
Yeah. Yeah. I left. I actually it took me about 3 years thanks to the pandemic. I left 2 weeks before the pandemic started, like the show.
Oh, wow.
Started. So I went to Chicago. And I was isolated for about a year and a half. And then I moved to warmer weathers and moved to Tampa. Warmer weathers, no car, so still isolated. And I did this whole internal healing, like the actual healing that needed to happen that wouldn't have happened if I was in that space. And now I'm emerging. And it's a very, like, lifestyle changes, as they call it. It's not really lifestyle changes. It's just, like, different choices of things I get to choose now. that mm-hmm. I wouldn't have if I was still immersed in this constant optimization, constant new technique, new modality, new way of doing. It's like mm-hmm. it's actually learning how to connect with yourself and learn how to listen to yourself.
Completely. And one of the things that I heard you say is that you're choosing what you're doing for yourself. Yeah. And that is so, I think that is so key to it. It's listening to yourself and connecting to yourself, as you were just saying. And, you know, it's so interesting. And part of, I wrote this book primarily when I still lived in Los Angeles, and I was just yeah. fascinated by the wellness community. And I was like, where is this headed? So I just started yeah. writing this book set 40 years in the future. And yeah. one of the things that I want to explore is we're constantly given these prescriptions of what wellness is. It's like, here's what you should eat. Here's how you should exercise. Here's how much you should sleep. Here's what you should be reading, doing, thinking, everything. And so I was really wanted to explore, like, what, like, if you follow that track all the way, where does it lead you? And who is behind this? And what is the motivation behind creating this?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's fascinating. So what was it like to write 40 years from now? Like, it's a different, it's a near future, because it's not fully dystopian, mm-hmm. not fully a post-apocalyptic, but it's still like closing off that, you know, our kids can read this book. They can be like, hey, it's just like Back to the Future.
Totally. Yeah. So I did a lot of research while I was writing Your Safe Here. I read a lot of research from very, very smart people like David Wallace Wells, who writes a lot about sort of climate change and where we're headed. And I based a lot of my research on his work and also The Sixth Extinction. I'm forgetting what the author's name is, but she's also a fabulous journalist who writes really about like where we're headed. And so much of the research that I did was around climate change, because there are these, you know, we can sort of imagine what the world will look like, especially in California. Oh my gosh, it's terrifying. There's I could go down a rabbit hole, but I'm like, there's not going to be water very soon. But, you know, I sort of had this basis of this foundation of this work that these incredible journalists have done. And then I was able to use my imagination to create so many situations. So
yeah.
I created this. I was imagining, like, what does social media look like 40 years in the future? And what I ended up coming up with was there's this constant content creation from what we're doing in our lives. And there's almost the line between our lives and the content we create is getting smaller, smaller, and smaller. So I created in this book, my characters wear this teeny camera that sort of is like a little teardrop that goes on the crown of your forehead. And it's called a POVE, P-O-H-V-E-E. Which is sort of a way of saying, you know, POV, perspective. And it's this camera that films 24 hours a day. And I honestly think that that's where we're headed. And this is something that other speculative fiction and other authors have also explored and thought about a lot. You know, I know that I think it's Dave Eggers in The Circle talks about, going transparent and filming your life constantly. But this idea of, like, I don't think that there's going to be a divide between what we show the world and how we live our lives. And so, it was fun to explore these themes and think about, like, oh, man, where are we headed? What do we look like as a community?
Yeah. And I think it's terrifying and at the same time fascinating. You know, totally. I grew up in the childhood. I graduated high school in 1999. And I went to college in 2003. So there was no Facebook. There was no evidence. Like, I'm just about to move. And so I was like moving my college pictures. And I was like, a part of me wants to just throw them away. But I'm like, that's the only evidence that I have for college, for 4 years of college, mm-hmm. is actually pictures that were printed. And so you don't have like stacks of stuff. And it's this idea, like, now this generation and generations way around me have all this data, all this information, all this internet breadcrumbs. And I work as an investigator. And so when I do research and I see like no one doesn't have internet life, that means it's a warning sign. Like, where is your bread?
They don't want to be seen.
They don't want to, like, those off grid. It's actually a red flag. If you're off grid, what are you trying to hide?
It's so interesting, and it's become so normalized now. And I graduated college like right on the edge of Facebook. And so I think that I got Facebook my sophomore or my junior year of college. Yeah. So I went through high school and part of college without it. And then it just absolutely exploded. And, you know, so much of my career has now been based in social media. And a lot of what I'm studying is social media addiction because I'm fascinated by it. But one of the things that I was exploring in my book is that one of my characters actually is lamenting because there's so much sort of embedded technology in the book where people have these sort of bio trackers that are embedded into their wrists. And there's something called a lens where they can sort of see a screen almost as if a contact lens through their eyes. And this character is talking about, oh, I miss the days when you could leave a smartphone in another room, that you weren't always constantly attached to it.
Yeah.
Which I think we'll be saying in not too long. I don't even think it'll take 40 years.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be like the way technology is moving forward is just, it's going at rapid speed. This is going to be a lost generation of older millennials and Gen Xers and boomers. And no breadcrumbs. And then this new generation have them fully
supercharged.
MERS in charge. And, you know, there's conversations about, like, you know, safety and like basic needs and like, what do you want to share? And, you know, do you want to see your mistakes actually live stream?
Totally. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting. I think the answer that I've created to that in my own life, because I write so much about my life and I write so vulnerably about it and I really share, is that I'm just trying to own and share my mistakes as I'm stumbling through this thing. Because I'm like, you know, there's this entire culture on the internet of projecting this perfection. And it's, I just want to be upfront and say, I'm not perfect. I don't know what the hell perfect is. Like, I'm just trying my best here and I'm figuring it out. And I promise to tell you as I go along what I'm learning from trial and error constantly.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're missing. We're missing that idea of vulnerability, not for the sake of vulnerability, but vulnerability for the sake of we're growing, we're learning, we're figuring out, we're trying to make mistakes. We're going to be flake out. We're going to come back. We're going to do this. And it's connection again, it's connection within yourself, it's connection with that inner voice or intuition or however you want to call it that has the best case scenario for you, whatever that's going to look like at that moment. It may change the next moment, but at least if you build that connection within yourself and maybe share with others, it's actually like the gift that you can get. It's imperfect.
It takes and it takes a lot of self-compassion to mess up over and over and over and to, to still accept that and just say, okay, this is being human. Like, I don't know.
It's life experience. It actually makes you a better writer. Makes you a better conversationalist. Oh,
totally.
Like, it's like life experience. Like, the things you have done, like, I think there's an obsession with age and, like, how you don't want to grow old and all these different things. The reality is, like, I am grateful to be this age and I'm grateful for the wisdom and the mistakes and all the jobs and all the careers and all the different things, all the different lifetimes that I had, because it has given me a perspective that I wouldn't have if I was 15 living.
Oh, my gosh. 15. I didn't know anything. Anything.
But we thought we knew everything.
I was positive that I was going to marry my high school boyfriend. You know, I think I spent 1 month with him, but I was like, this is it.
So we're not going to go for a lunch addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like fighting with my dad. I was like, you don't know.
Yes.
So, but, you know, you live and you learn.
So let's talk about some book recommendations. What kind of books do you tend to read and what kind of books do you recommend our listeners to pick up?
Oh my gosh, I read a little bit of everything. I truly do. I love memoirs. I love really like high theory counseling books. I love novels. I feel like, oh my gosh, just for the sake of keeping this into a manageable place, maybe I'll just talk about novels here. But gosh, I'm thinking of so many of the novels that I really love and I really gravitate towards do deal with issues around, you know, are around speculative fiction. I'm thinking of, there's a really wonderful book that I think came out about 3 or 4 years ago by Rebecca Sherm. It's called A House Between the Earth and the Moon. And it has a lot of similarities to my book, actually. There's a really interesting sort of megalomaniac tech founder.
Yeah.
And instead of it taking place on the ocean, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, it is sort of like on land and also in space. It's fantastic. Another one that I love, Aidan Lapucki. I don't know if it's Lapucki or Lapucki. I feel terrible because I adore her books. She has so many great books, but she writes a lot about, most of her books take place in California. Her most recent book was called Time's Mouth, which was fascinating. A lot of her books also sort of delve into cults and ideas around masculine and feminine ideas and intuition. And Time's Mouth, it takes place, across generations. And it sort of starts with this one woman and it kind of goes into the story of her daughter. And they've been born with this very mysterious but spectacular gift that is explored in a really interesting way in the book. And I don't know how much I want to say because it's so interesting. I don't want to take away from it. Another book that was very influential to mine, even though it's a completely different plot, like they could not be more dissimilar, is Miracle Creek by Angie Kim.
Yeah. It
literally has nothing to do with my book. It's sort of more of a courtroom drama, and it alternates between the timelines of this courtroom and these people who are being charged with the explosion of a hyperbaric chamber that was being used to treat children who are on this autism spectrum. And it's this horrible tragedy that the reason that I say that it influenced my book is that I use a lot of flashbacks and alternate timelines, and the way that Angie sort of maneuvers that in her own book. And there's actually a very sneaky ode to her book in my book that maybe very astute readers will be able to pick out. Her book cover appears in my book. I sort of describe it without naming it.
Yeah.
Just to pay homage, because I adore it so much. And it's such a beautiful book. I can keep going.
I love Miracle Creek. It was such a life-changing book in some ways, because it just brought up this idea of like the courtroom drama, but there's also this treatment of autism and the expectation and the push and pull that we're expecting our kids to go, for in the
spectrum. Totally.
At the same time, like this tragedy that occurs. And it just, the meeting of the minds, it's like this place of like everything comes together and you're trying to make sense as a reader. It's such a good book.
Completely. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I recommend everyone read that. And I'm so happy to hear that you love it.
Yeah. So Leslie, tell us where you can find you online, your Substack and your website.
Yeah, so my Substack is morningpersonnewsletter.com. You can subscribe there. I'm on Instagram, very sporadically, but at Leslie Stepp, LESLIESTEPH. And then my website is lesliestevens.com, and that's where I post about things like author events. I'm about to go on a bi-coastal book tour and sort of share what I'm generally up to and where I am in the world.
Love it. Thank you, Leslie, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the What to Read Next podcast. If you enjoy our bookish conversations and want more recommendations, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, head on over to the What to Read Next blog for a list of books mentioned in today's show. Happy reading. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.